This is Dr. Charles Parker, and you're listening to Core Brain Journal. It's a place where I connect both fresh discoveries and interesting different perspectives from advanced mind science with the realities of real people and everyday life down on Main Street.
Well, welcome, gang. This is Dr. Charles Parker once again at Core Brain Journal. And we are so pleased today. We've got Dorothy Kuhn here with us, and she is a very, very interesting woman who is, get this, a physicist who actually has had a very serious bout with dementia. So, I mean, if she's that bright, she knew when the equipment wasn't working right. And she's going to tell us about it, and she's going to tell us what she has done about it and what she continues to do to spread the word on what she thinks needs to be done about it. Welcome, Dorothy. I didn't say hi to you. Welcome aboard. We're happy to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So I'm going to do a brief introduction, and you're down in Denton, Texas.
Yes, I am, just outside Dallas.
Oh my gosh, I did have dinner one time up in that tall, the Energy Building or something like that, the Energy Club or whatever it was at the time.
There's the Petroleum Engineers Club. There's Reunion Tower. All kinds of tall buildings in Dallas.
I was down there with Dr. Edward DeBono.
Oh, and, very good.
And it was a really wonderful opportunity.
Nice.
So back to it. So Dorothy is a physicist, and she has become a business turnaround expert. Later on, she discovered that she had dementia. So she then got into the whole process of dementia and decided to turn that process around as well. So she created a simple system that she's going to share a little bit with us today that really is a way to pull together that entire package, how the mind works, dementia, recovery, business management. Dorothy really does it all. So with that brief intro, Dorothy, could you tell us a little bit about your personal life real quickly?
Well, I live here in Denton, Texas, in a vintage home that was built in 1945. I've got a cute little dog and two grown kids, and my son is about to get married this summer.
Oh,
so life is just wonderful.
Oh, that will be fun. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I want to make a little update. Since I first provided you that information on dementia, I've been in conversations with people with the Alzheimer's Association and Alzheimer's International. And so, you know, my background is in science, but physics, not medicine. Mm-hmm. So when they use the dementia word, they mean medically diagnosed with dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, even so, I had memory and focus issues that were so disruptive that they were really getting in my way and kind of ruining my life in a big way. I'm glad I got that turned around. I never got to the point where I was medically diagnosed, which is great because, as I found out later, by the time a person is able to be medically diagnosed, instead of having some, you know, and growing damage in the brain, it's a firestorm of tissue loss. Mm-hmm. That's how Dr. Paul Thompson, Associate Dean at USC, describes it, a firestorm. So obviously the opportunity, you know, I was, you know, just blessed beyond compare to have acted quickly and early. And so that's just a languaging thing that I learned since I first sent that information over to you.
So I appreciate it. We're going to be very careful about the medical term dementia while we're talking.
Yeah.
So can we call it cognitive impairment?
Yeah, I was definitely impaired.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about that, Dorothy? What actually happened? I mean, I saw your notes here, but it sounds like it was a total shock, like the curtain came down so abruptly. What happened?
Well, the story that I think I sent over to you was kind of the culmination. I you know, I'm here in the South. It was my come to Jesus moment. But that wasn't the first conversation that I had had. It had been ongoing for 3 years.
Oh, it had. Uh-huh.
And as it turns out, that process that leads up to dementia goes on for 20 to 30 years. So that's a really long time.
It caught my attention right there. I want to just say, because I know others are thinking the same thing I am. How did you use the retrospectoscope and see later on? What was actually going on those 3 or 4 years before? What were the symptoms?
That brilliant question. So looking back in time, my earliest symptoms, the earliest symptoms are symptoms in which the brain and the body are not talking well together. You know, of course, that's a continual conversation. They never not talk, right? Mm.
Yeah.
And so once I got past that crisis point and could remember well again and focus and do all the things that I'm accustomed to doing, I was looking back, and the problems that I had had in my early 40s, so I was in my mid-50s when I had that challenge. I'm 59 now, and when I looked back, my earliest symptoms were just resolved. And I'd had no idea that they had anything to do with my brain, but it was this shoulder here, my left shoulder. And it would pull in all the time. I was always uncomfortable trying to get it comfortable. And, you know, doctors didn't have anything to say about it. You know, nothing really worked. And I just thought, oh, well, you know, what can you do? Once I got this brain thing, you know, recovered, no more symptoms. Additionally, when I first went to a functional medicine doctor, you know, they did that functional assessment, mm-hmm. with fingers that go like this and looking at my uvula. Well, uvulas hang down.
Mm-hmm.
Not mine. Bing.
Really?
Yeah. So the damage that I had is up over here in the upper right side of the brain, because of course brains do that cross-lateral thing. The right side controls the left side of the body. And the signals were, I had this part of the brain, I don't know what it's called, I didn't ask, mm-hmm. that overfires in a way that that sends all kinds of goofy signals to the other side. So I have movements that I do on a regular basis to calm down that overfiring part of the brain. And I've taken out the triggers that caused that damage in the first place. And a variety of other things in order to get my memory, my focus back, because the body symptoms are just, and those are, you know, the uvula and the shoulder are just part of the body symptoms.
They were just symptoms that you could see. So yeah. take us a little bit closer to that shocking, painful moment when you were walking with your daughter,
mm-hmm.
and the lights went on or the curtain fell, whatever you want to say, but somehow, What were the symptoms that became so evident at that moment that shocked you and your daughter?
So I had spent a really wonderful weekend, Saturday and Sunday lunches with my two grown kids. Pretty rare weekend. It was the Sunday after Thanksgiving, and I was talking with my son that day. The three of us were together. I was talking with my son on Sunday, and so the conversation we had had the day before at lunch had never happened. And that's when my daughter looked at me like, you know,
so
that
you were,
silence.
You didn't remember it. You confessed that you didn't.
I did
not
remember.
I got you.
And when she looked at me, I could remember a shred of having had that conversation, but I couldn't remember the conversation itself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So just the shred of the context of having had that conversation. And I knew at that point that, I mean, I'd been struggling for 3 years at that point. I knew that I had to do something. I could not pretend I was managing it anymore.
So now the burning question, of course, is what did you do when you had that shocking dementia revelation, I should say, cognitive dissonance revelation?
It was definitely a cognitive dissonance, because you know how we hold ourselves and think of ourselves changes really slowly, even when we're showing up in a different way. And I was definitely showing up not really as Dorothy, the Dorothy that Dorothy knows who she is. Mm. But I called the functional medicine doctor that I mentioned and just asked for a referral over to the best neurologist in Dallas. Second best will not do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Let's go.
It's like, well, I can get you to them. Used to work with them. You know, Southwestern Medical in Dallas is a brilliant place, mm-hmm. for mostly conventional medicine. And I got to say, I like conventional medicine. It saved my bacon on more than one occasion. But, you know, no point of view has the solution for everything. And they, you know, by their own admission, don't have a solution for the kind of stuff that I was struggling with. So we took a functional medicine approach to get the brain and the body working well together and took out all the inflammatory foods. Because, you know, what?
Inflammatory foods.
Yeah.
Did you do IgG testing and that sort of thing on the front end, or did you just plain old take out inflammatory foods?
Took out, so we could have done that, but we didn't, because those are very expensive tests,
mm-hmm.
right?
They are.
$700. And you can find out in, you know, if you've got some discipline, and, you know, lots of us have discipline, mm-hmm. then you can find out by taking out the very common inflammatory foods. You know, there are seven of them, and milk, soy, and gluten are top of the list. Corn's right up there. Et cetera, et cetera. So take those things out and leave them out for 3 weeks and then start introducing. And if you get a reaction, that's your kryptonite.
That's a big one. So let me stop you right there, because you said it very quickly and I'm totally with you on what you're talking about. In my office, we do IgG testing all the time. Because I'm a traditional psychiatrist, I don't really want to look like I'm completely out there making things up. So
right.
I want to have some clear evidence if I'm going to do anything. So we do IgG testing all the time and say, look, if I'm going to do something, let's measure this and be sure.
Uh-huh.
And I used to call it the New Jersey trifecta, because I'm from Philadelphia and they're always talking about the New Jersey races. But the three in the order that we see in my Virginia Beach office, and we've done hundreds of them, are milk, eggs, and wheat, in that order. Wheat is a
yes.
slow third. Now, what's you said it very quickly. You said milk something.
Soy.
Soy. Okay, I couldn't quite hear what you
soy.
Said.
Soy. And soy is a little hard on the ladies as well, because it does that phytoestrogen thing so often.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we don't want those precursors to breast cancer. Not helping
Absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely. Nothing like a little estrogen dominance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you went on a diet, and then what else did you do after you actually started thinking about it? Did you have a kind of Herxheimer reaction when you went on that diet? Did you fall apart a little bit?
No, I didn't, because I had something I wanted on the other side of it. You know, when you want something bad enough, you don't really care too much, you know, if it's a camel, you know, a bear, a horse that's getting you there, as long as you get there in one piece.
Well said. So then some people do have, it's interesting, because people get addicted to the substances that they're favorite. Like, I've had people cry and almost throw books at me when I told them milk was the problem. I'm just reading the results to them, and they can,
right,
and they could have months of unhappiness because they actually have a kind of opiate withdrawal from those things.
I totally get that. Now, I did have this discovery that happened in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. I wasn't eating any gelato then, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's chilly here, and even in Texas.
Yep.
But in the spring, when I realized, you know, the weather was warming up, and I realized I will never have gelato again. I've got to tell you, it was not a good day.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But you know what? I ask myself this question, and it's the question that that a good scientist will ask, and it makes all the difference in life. What else is possible? What else can I do? Mm-hmm. What if there were something I would like even better? And mm-hmm. I found something.
Well, yeah, and so then let's tell us more what that is, because we're right here in the middle of the story. What did you do next, if you don't mind?
So after I took out those foods...
Mm-hmm.
Then we did, she had me do some very simple kind of brain calming movements. So to begin with, there were linear movements, no complex movements at all, just simple linear movements several times a day to calm down that part of the brain that had damage and needed some help to calm down. Mm-hmm. You probably see this in psychiatry all the time. People who are anxious, I wasn't anxious overall, but this one part of my brain was overfiring. And I've never had I had one little bout of anxiety in my 30s. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about it mm-hmm. and from a physiological perspective. So inform me. I would think that people who are anxious have got a lot going on in their brain, and it's going back and forth, and there's a lot of firing.
Oh, yeah.
Is that about right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So I just... It was miserable, and I got it calmed down with that leveraging the connection between the body and the brain.
So pardon me for interrupting, because I get excited about what you're talking about. I apologize. But were you actually doing a meditative practice, per se? What was the actual activity that you were doing so our listeners could get a picture of it?
Well, I would sit down. So two things. You ask about meditation. I do yoga and meditation. I had an active practice at the time. They're wonderful. I really recommend them. But for this, in addition, the point was to calm down this part of the brain that's up here. Mm-hmm. And so that was a very linear movement with my hand and my left hand and my left leg.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. And the brain will pay attention to something for a little while, and after, you know, it's like the same thing, same thing, same thing. Oh, okay, got that. I'm gonna ignore it. And it was that ignoring it part, not being hyper vigilant on what was happening over on this side of the body, that helped that part of the brain calm down.
So what she was doing, folks, she and I are on video together, but you won't see the video. But she was talking about her left arm and her left leg was actually correcting the right side of her mind, and the right side of her mind was the one that was pouring anxiety over the entire situation. So it was.
That's a great way to describe it. Yeah.
So then take us for a moment into this next level of your practice, because that was the painful moment. That's where you had a transformational, and you had an aha. We see a lot of people who, when they just get on the diet, change in a week or two, significantly change in a week or two, because the inflammation's quieted down. Go ahead. What were you
yes.
going to say?
It's exactly true. And when the inflammation, you know, our bodies want to get rid of inflammation from those core organs out to, when those core organs are overloaded with inflammation, they have to get them out somehow. So they'll send them to places that aren't as core, like not your liver, right? So the kinds of things that I did, in addition, I changed my diet, took out those things that were inflammatory for me. I paid attention to the kinds of other things that were inflammatory. So I found out later that peanuts were for me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you probably find that, you know, they've got, what is that? Is it a fungus that is symbiotic with peanuts?
Yes, and I can't remember.
Something like yeah. that. I forget exactly the name of it. But that would give me kind of that little bit of tickle and thickening in the back of the throat. I'd eaten peanut butter for years. No more of that stuff, because it was the thing that causes most dementias. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, the football players of the world. They've got their own issue going. Bam, bam. Mm-hmm. The thing that causes most is a weakness in the blood-brain barrier. Just like if that inflammatory response showed up on your skin and you saw it as a rash, well, you would see it, you would feel it, it would be painful or itchy. But that's because you have pain receptors in your skin. And what I didn't know then, but I do now, is that in our brains, zero is the number of pain receptors we have. You know that, yeah. Right? But I didn't know that. And so you can't feel that inflammatory response and how bad it is for you when it's happening in your brain. You have to look at these other indicators, like how your body is not responding well. I had a loss of balance. Mm. That I only noticed because I was doing some social dancing. Mm-hmm. And after a while, and I danced fairly well, and then my dance, instead of getting better, was getting worse. Like, what's up with that?
Ouch. Yeah. So that blood-brain barrier point is a very interesting point. I think that our listeners would like, if you have a little more could tell a little more about that. And I know you're not, you know, a neurologist per se, but what was going on there in that blood-brain barrier? Do you have any idea about how that thing got inflamed and what was going on?
Yeah, so, you know, every there are things, the reason you have blood in your brain is to nourish your brain. And so there are things in your brain that are things rather in your blood system that's in your brain that are necessary and good that are supposed to stay in your bloodstream, right? Mm-hmm. They want to nourish your brain, but there are other things that just need to pass on through those blood vessels mm-hmm. and not get out. Well, when that blood-brain barrier is weak, those things can seep out over time. And when they do, they damage your brain cells over time. So that's why it takes 20 to 30 years for that accumulated damage to get to a point where you notice it. For me, it was showing up in my early 40s in my shoulder, and then in my balance, and then in my ability to remember. And it just, it comes to a point where that tissue damage starts cascading. And, you know, I had a lot of brain fog, head fog.
Yeah.
And that's the time really to catch it. So in my, I mentioned earlier the Alzheimer's and the Alzheimer's International, you know, my kind of gentle person's agreement with them is to really focus on prevention.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that brain fog time is the best time to catch it because you can do something. You don't have the firestorm of tissue loss.
Well, you know, it's so interesting while you're talking because what you're saying, and our listeners really need to take a moment to consider this, because what you're saying is that in that regards, the blood-brain barrier is very much like what's going on with the bowel when you have a quote-unquote leaky gut.
Yes.
Because people talk about leaky gut, and you know, the public really understands leaky gut. I mean, most of the people that would be listening to this program have heard leaky gut ad infinitum. I mean, even when you go down the Pacific Coast Highway in California, they don't have it as a sign outside the restaurant, but it's close. Don't have a leaky gut, eat here.
Right.
But, you know, it's one of those commonplace things that people talk about all the time. But you're saying the blood-brain barrier is very much like a leaky gut because that those apertures, those places where smaller things should be getting through, bigger things are getting through, and you have an inflammatory process. And that inflammatory process, those glial cells and all those guys in there trying to handle what's going on with the brain, and they just get packed up and can't handle it.
They cannot handle it. And, you know, a big part, you mentioned wheat. You know, wheat, as I'm sure you well know, is nothing like the wheat from 100 years ago before wheat was hybridized and then GMO'd and all that kind of stuff. It's a very different plant. And we treat it really differently in creating products that have to have long shelf life and, you know, be stable on the shelf and, yeah. and things like that. Well, calories are not calories. Calories, you know, the kind of calorie it is and the quality and what is associated with it, how it's treated, is a big deal in the difference between eating something that nourishes your body and eating something that inadvertently damages your body.
Well, one program that we have that will roll your socks up and down is Dr. Peter Osborne at 005. And Peter Osborne talked about, he's got a new book out called, No Pain, No Brain, I can't remember what it is now, but it's, he had a very interesting story. And what's going on, Peter has all these different gluten proteins understood much more thoroughly than anybody I've ever heard. And it's
wow.
a very interesting program because he talks about what happens when you go off gluten, but there are still problems that are occurring.
Right.
Because gluten itself is a, just as you said, it's evolved as a protein over time, just as milk has evolved over time.
Right.
And so what happens, those different larger proteins create problems. And in fact, they even have cows that, you know, I don't know if you've read the book, The Devil in the Milk. You would love that book. I mean, this is written by a PhD researcher in New Zealand. And he studied the cows that came from Africa 15,000 years ago. Now, don't ask me how he figured all that out. But the bottom line is they had a different type of casein.
Uh-huh.
Than the later cows, and the later cows developed a type of casein genetic changes. That
right.
actually is much more damaging than the casein of the cows, and they have, you know, they're alpha 1 cows and alpha 2 cows.
Okay.
And so it's a whole, but that idea of things changing over time and creating a diversity that our body is really not accustomed to dealing with. It
right.
causes an inflammatory process. But you'll enjoy listening to Peter over there.
I can't wait. And you know, in a way, this is very much a first world problem, because here we live to be, you know, much older than even 50 mm-hmm. years ago people lived often. But I don't want to make that seem like it's not important, because the fact of the matter is, any one person who is, you know, a mature person who is suddenly getting brain fog, they've still got a long time to live.
Yeah.
And the point is, what's the quality of that life, and what are the simple changes that you can make to be able to keep your memory, keep your focus, be able to recognize your grandchildren and live life, you know, live the life you have been given in a full and meaningful way. When you can do that, that's a win.
It sure is. I'm going to mention to our listeners, Dorothy, that Dorothy's been kind enough to share with us a PDF download that you folks can get a hold of anytime you come over to, you don't even need to go to Core Brain Journal. You can hear this in your car, but just go in and type in corebrainjournal.com/019download. And her PDF talking about the dementia-free life, our live dementia-free, will be there for you. So that's 019 download, all one word. So Dorothy, wrapping this up a little bit, where are you going in the future? What are you doing now? I mean, I ask you a lot of questions at the same time. Let's talk about new directions for you.
Okay. So where I'm going now, I have a free training call that'll be coming up before you publish this in your radio show.
Yeah.
And I'll be doing those from time to time. And it's wonderful to be able to really step from, I speak all over North Texas, which is, you know, I'm kind of a, I never thought I would like public speaking, but I do. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, when you've got a big story to tell and you finally have the courage to do it, was another, like, big step over. And a lot of the people that I've worked with, they still don't want their names used because there's such a stigma associated with anything that's not going right upstairs, you know?
That is so true. That's definitely
it is. But, you know, some people are courageous and step out, and it took a lot for me. But going forward, I'm moving out to be online so that I can really serve people in a wonderful way. And I have a training class that I will finish up the last session of it later today. It's a virtual boot camp called My Memory Fitness System, and it's got you know, 5 sessions in it so that people can learn the things that I spent, you know, years putting together from the various pieces that I did with my doctor. When you start early enough, you know, you can really do everything that you need to on your own when you know what to do.
So that's interesting. So do you sign up at your website then for
them? Yes.
So in your website, you want to tell everybody what it is?
Yes, it's www.livedementiafree, L-I-V-E. Dementia is D-E-M-E-N-T-I-A.
Yes.
Free, F-R-E-E.com. And you know, when I was first having this, I spelled dementia in 5 different ways. This is how far I was holding that away from me. And that's a little bit of an irony, because my own father had Lewy body disease. It's an uncommon form of dementia.
Mm. So good. So they can reach you there. And what will happen is they could sign up for those trainings if they wanted to.
They can.
And do you have a newsletter as well? Do you send out news, or what do you do on that?
I do. Once or twice a week, they'll get an email with a tip for what to do to, you know, it keeps people who have been through the programs, you know, on track, and helps people who haven't been through to know what are the kinds of things that we're doing in this program.
So what would be, in closing, one quick point? We've talked about diet. What about those folks that really can't do any testing, that really feel that they're having some problems either with their equilibrium or their ability to remember? What would be one or two things that you would say, hey, they got to do this right now?
Oh, they definitely have to take those inflammatory foods out. Milk, soy, gluten, peanuts, corn is a pretty good inflammatory. And there's hardly any non-GMO corn in the United States anyway. Mm-hmm. Take those things out.
And that's number one, yeah.
That is number one. If you don't stop the damage, nothing else you do is going to. And make organic choices as often as you can. We can't do that all the time. You can bet if you're going to a restaurant, unless it's a certified kind of organic restaurant, that you're getting GMO food. But stay with that organic as much as you can, because that chemical load, it's not a benefit to you. It cannot help you.
Well, it's interesting, the big turnaround you had in such a short period of time just doing that. It sounds like you also did some physical activity as well.
Yes, yes. And in fact, brain activation is the next piece people really get to learn all the ways in which to activate your brain. And at a high level, those are cross-lateral movements. Think about how babies crawl. The right hand and the left knee are going at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so any kind of cross-lateral movement is very activating for the brain, and there are a whole variety of other things. I don't know how much time we've got left.
Well, we're about to wind up. I think the thing would be for people to just go in and get that download at 019 download. Take a look at it. Look at ways to connect. You probably have some good tips there. And, I think it's really interesting that you're a physicist and a business person, and over here talking about these very important things. We were talking a little bit about Heisenberg before we started here, and I was really pleased that Dorothy gave me a name that I need to chase down out at Berkeley on, who is into cognitive neuroscience. And
oh yeah,
Dr. I'm going to put his name in the show notes.
There you go, Dr. George Lakoff, Lakoff, brilliant man.
I'll definitely do that. So thank you so much, Dorothy, for taking the time. We really appreciate it. And I think it's been very, very helpful. There's a lot of good information here, and it gives people hope. They have something to do without necessarily running around. And your experience is really, we see it in our office very frequently. A problem,
uh-huh.
And we've seen everybody, and the only thing they have is just medicine. Now, medicine's good. We're not running medicine down, because I think it's easy to run it down based, again, on the stigma and so on and so forth. Medicine's helpful, but there are other things you can do to put that package together more effectively.
It's very true. I agree. And when I speak and doctors are in the audience, they will come up to me afterwards and say, I'm so glad because I have these medicines to prescribe, but I don't know if they do any good. And in fact, you can look on the Alzheimer's Association site. What they say about dementia-related medicines are this. These currently available medicines do not cure and cannot stop the progression of Alzheimer's or other dementias.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the research that's still in play to be able to solve that problem. And my perspective is solve it on the front end and get your health back and be a happy person.
So well said, Dorothy. It's so good you had that transformation down there in Dallas.
Yay.
Appreciate
it's a
it, girl.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much for coming on board, and we'll look forward to talking to you again on the flip side.
Thank you, Charles. Delighted to be here. So glad for the work you're doing make this world a better place.
Thanks for listening to CoreBrain Journal. We're working every day behind the scenes to bring you reports that connect research benches with those street trenches. Here we share the complexity of mind science because, as you know, details really do matter. One of the most pervasive, misunderstood challenges is how commonplace medications like those written for ADHD are used so regularly without clear guidelines. If you think you'd like more specifics, take a minute to download my 2-page PDF packed with video links and references on the absolute essentials of how to start ADHD medications. They're easily available at corebrainjournal.com/start. Thanks for listening. Do connect and stay tuned. Together we can make a difference.